Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 21st day of September, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Call, and it's another one of those days, folks, FOMC days, when the eyes of all the world's biggest idiots and those that believe they're running the financial markets, when in fact, it's all just funny money anyway, are focused on the biggest smokescreen on the planet today, and that is what the great gods from Mount Olympus and Eccles Street will do. Will they hike 0.75%? And what will their forward guidance look like? How rapidly do they want to destroy the economy of the world and replace it with the new world fiat, in this case, digital global currency? I know, it's tough not to be really cynical, but let's start off with this quick headline just to make sure that we, understand why we should be. J.P. Morgan's Fed Day scenario analysis, says a piece from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, the market could have the best day in history, or it could crash 5%. Maybe we'll know when the smoke clears. At least most analysts, 94 out of 96 of them, think that, 75 basis points is about right. Hey, folks, I got a question. Anybody think when there's no product to be bought, and they're literally printing new fiat bucks by the trillions, that that's going to make a darn bit of difference? Well, we'll see what happens when the smoke clears. If the smoke clears. Here's another headline while we're waiting. And yeah, be cynical. Be very cynical. After years of probing, looking for anything and everything, but mostly just anything they could blame on Orange Man Bad, the scumbag masquerading as New York Attorney General Letitia James has finally sued President Donald Trump for allegedly using fraudulent asset valuations. And how much of a hoot is that on a day like today? I mean, really, if you buy a candy bar for a buck and a half that used to cost a nickel, so are you. According to Bloomberg, James is seeking around $250 million in disgorgement from the various defendants. I gotta admit, folks, the hypocrisy here makes me feel like disgorging my lunch. And how bad is it? Why, I'd almost rather look at crackhead Hunter's laptop than watch this woman pontificate. Why no disgorgement there? And they're not only after Trump, of course. Not only Trump, but Trump supporters, relatives, just about anybody that ever saw the guy on TV, even. And demands that the Trump Organization be barred from engaging in commercial real estate acquisitions in New York for a period of 5 years. And you can guess what's even more important than that. And this would be funny if it wasn't so representative of the entire destruction of the U.S. system of just us. A Trump spokesperson has denounced the New York lawsuit as a political act. No, not really. That's more like a circus in a kangaroo court. This, however, might be a political act, courtesy of Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden. A BP spokesperson has told Reuters that the latest major fire, this time at a BP Husky Toledo refinery in Oregon, Ohio, has been shut down, safely, of course, in response to Tuesday night's sudden and unexpected fire. The cause is still unknown, says the spokesperson to Reuters, but it might have been leaking fumes from a crude unit that might have caused the ignition in maybe another unit at the facility. Trouble is, the refinery processes about 160,000 barrels of crude oil daily, providing the Midwest with gasoline, diesel, jet fuel, propane, asphalt, and other products that pretty soon might not be available at any price. And there's no word, says the story, if the refinery fire will spark fuel shortages across the Midwest, as opposed to the continuing fires that have to do with food shortages. Well, at the very least, folks, it's another great excuse for hyperinflation in fuel prices. So, just in case you're curious, here's what we can now scratch off the list. On a daily basis, said BP, that refinery can produce, or did produce, 3.8 million gallons of gasoline, 1.3 million gallons of diesel fuel, and 600,000 gallons of Jet A. Let's do one more quick story on the falsehood front. Again, not like we haven't heard example after example here, but it certainly is educational to see how many more people are realizing if you've taken one, two, or three, or who knows how many doses of the Zyklon B, better quit while you're still alive. This one comes from Joel S. Hirshhorn via the All News Pipeline, and it's entitled, Three Important New Medical Studies Confirm, and I hope you're sitting down, folks, that the risk of taking the so-called COVID vax outweigh the benefits for basically almost everybody. Details it adds on the deadly vax risks that you'll never learn from the MSM. Oh, and it adds furthermore, these studies prove that no other vaccines ever on the market, much less ever mandated to be injected into people who ought to know better, are as deadly as the COVID not vax. One of them is entitled, Serious Adverse Effects of Special Interest Following mRNA Vaccination in Random Trials. Hey, guess what that shows? Another one says, Randomized Clinical Trials of COVID-19 Vaxes. Do adenovirus vector vaccines have beneficial non-specific effects? Key finding? Oh, no. Based on the RCTs with the longest possible follow-up, which isn't very long yet, mRNA vaccines had no effect on overall mortality, despite, at least allegedly, and I added that in there admittedly, protecting against fatal COVID-19. Problem is, they don't even remotely protect you from all the other fatal risks associated with the side effects. And honestly, folks, we've seen so much of this for so long, I'm no longer even calling these things side effects. I think they were what we engineers used to call features. But still, they say, the long-term risks of the mRNA vaccines can be very significant. The final study is entitled, Are the COVID mRNA Vaccines Safe? And the bottom line is, it's the responsibility of the manufacturers and FDA, ha ha ha, yeah, sure, to ensure that benefits outweigh harms. And I hope you're sitting down. Quote, they have failed to do so. And I think, again, folks, that's one of those medical understatements. By now, you hopefully know why. Here's a bit more economic news. Might as well talk about this before the Fed sticks another wooden stake in it. We're getting more glimpses, says Zero Hedge, of the carnage in the housing market since August. With mortgage rates having soared, home builder sentiment tumbling, and perhaps even plunging, it's no surprise that existing home sales were expected, and indeed did, fall for the seventh straight month. Down 2.3% month over month. But hey, that's not quite as bad as the plunge in July. And even though it's not quite as bad, that one was down almost 6%, it's still, they note, seven consecutive drops, which left existing home sales down 19.9% so far, year over year. The longest consecutive streak of decline since October 2007. And maybe you can remember what happened not long after that. And I guess with all this bad news coming out so transparently, maybe it's not surprising that this next story says, yeah, if we don't want the American people to know what's happening, and they won't believe the lies anyway, why don't we just not tell them at all? This comes from antiwar.com, also via Zero Hedge, about the State Department, or what now passes for it, which announced back in August to almost zero fanfare that they're no longer going to publish some information called the World Military Expenditures and Arms Transfers, or WMEAT reports, which, back before Big Brother gave up all pretense of honesty or transparency, were released by it since the 1960s. The WMEATs detail U.S. global military spending, arms transfers, and you can guess why they're not going to talk about this anymore, can't you? And related data for each country in the world that slurps at the American arms trough. The 2022 NDA included an amendment that repealed a provision dating back to 1994 requiring the State Department to transparently publish the information at least once a year. But now they said the one they published for 2021 was the last you're going to be allowed to see. That one showed that the U.S. was by far the world's largest arms dealer, and during the period from 2009 through 2019, about 79% of the entire world arms trade by value was apparently supplied by the United States. And now, notes the story, as if you hadn't already figured it out, the discontinuation of WMEAT reports reduces the U.S. government's transparency, which was already pretty darn opaque, folks. And this comes as Big Brother is now shipping billions of dollars more worth of arms and who knows what else into Ukraine with, say it with me, virtually no oversight. And now it's pretty much gone to zero, with the possible exception of those that are making sure the big guy gets his cut off the top. And I guess, folks, when the last U.S. Marine ships his rifle off to good old stand-up comedian President Zelenko, we'll know that that part of the plan is complete. And since we're pretty much on the subject, let's go to our World War III update next. In a nationwide address that was delayed from its primetime Tuesday delivery ahead of votes in four regions in Ukraine that want to join Russia, on Wednesday morning, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a partial military mobilization and also vowed to use all means necessary to defend Russia against things like the expansion of NATO and occupation of their territory, and pledged to annex those territories already occupied by Russia, thus raising the stakes in the seven-month-old or more conflict, calling the moves, quote, urgent, necessary steps to defend the sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity of Russia. Putin said Russia is fighting the full might of NATO, the U.S., and its allies, all of which, he said, are seeking to destroy Russia. The Daily Mail's headline is a bit more hysterical than Zero Hedge. They put it this way: Putin's nuclear, all caps, threat to the West. Vladimir warns Ukraine's allies he will use weapons of destruction and announces the mobilization of another 300,000 troops, declaring in the process, "I am not bluffing." That mobilization of reservists, by the way, is the first Russian mobilization since World War II. And, of course, the Brits called Putin all kinds of names, like the desperate despot, which may or may not be true, but one thing's for sure. Like him, hate him, or despise him, he's certainly not senile. Speaking of which, the marionette teleprompter reader-in-chief addressed the UN and basically didn't say much of anything worth noting. Says the coverage, there was little unexpected in the lengthy speech, nor were there any specific new U.S. courses of action or sanctions. No surprise to anyone, he blasted the outrageous invasion of Ukraine and tried to get the UN General Assembly to believe that the war is all about, quote, extinguishing Ukraine's right to exist as a state, plain and simple, unquote. But he wasn't done. He threw in this whopper, quote, but no one threatened Russia, and no one other than Russia sought conflict. I guess kind of like no one has threatened the American people, and no one except the American people, especially if they actually believe they still have a Bill of Rights, is seeking conflict either. But my personal favorite's got to be this one. He highlighted Putin's mention of nuclear weapons in his Wednesday speech and then added, quote, we are not seeking a new Cold War, unquote. No, folks, they're seeking a really, really hot one, and they may yet get it. Oh, what the heck. After that, I guess we need a bit of comic relief, even though, really, insanity masquerading as leadership isn't the least bit funny, but what are you going to do other than ridicule what we've got instead? Jesse Waters at Fox did a lengthy piece on the Bidenfuhrer and his who-are-we-kidding level of senility, noting that after the dementia poster boy announced that the plandemic was over at a car show on 60 Minutes, they're still forcing masks on kids in federally funded programs, however, his puppet masters really had to scurry to walk it back. After replaying the usual sequence of gaffes and idiocies and outright forgetfulness and talking to the walls or imaginary people or whatever else we've seen of late, and that's not counting falling off bicycles or down plane ramps, he turned to Senator and Dr. Rand Paul from Kentucky for a comment, who said out loud what all of us who don't get news from the criminally negligent networks have known for at least 2 years now.
So why do they want to cling to this pandemic so thoroughly, Dr. Paul?
Well, you know, Jesse, this may come as a surprise to you, but I'm not sure that Joe Biden is fully in charge of the government or fully in charge of his wits, for that matter. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that the response to this has always been about submission and control of the individual. These are the people who truly believe in the nanny state, whether it's your business they want to be in charge of or your health care, and they can't give it up.
Nor will they even admit, folks, how transparently evil what they've done is, from installing a true idiot in the White House to destroying the economy, to destroying the food supply chain, to destroying the U.S. military, and literally prepping the United States for invasion and butchering like a fat hog. This next story isn't nearly as high profile, but certainly highlights a different aspect of the war on all things that were once called truth, justice, and the American way, at least. It has to do with Vanderbilt University Medical Center, or VUMC. I guess once they were a respected medical and educational facility, which has now deleted the website of their so-called transgender clinic after journalist Matt Walsh outed them for being the, can I say it? Yeah, you betcha. Scumbags that they so clearly are. A doctor in particular promoted the transgender surgeries for that transgender clinic as a big money maker for the institution. Videos obtained by Walsh, says Zero Hedge, which also posted them, apparently show threats made against various VUMC medical professionals who objected to the procedures, even for religious reasons. Walsh posted his findings in a lengthy Twitter thread on Tuesday, in which Dr. Shane Taylor can be seen bragging about how she convinced Nashville to get into these so-called gender transitions because it's, quote, a big moneymaker, especially since the surgeries require a lot of follow-ups. Surprise, surprise, surprise. A lot of times, folks, people try to reverse them, too, and that doesn't work so well. According to Dr. Ellen Clayton, those with, quote, conscientious objections to the program are problematic, and anyone who dares oppose the transgender surgery program will face consequences. If you're going to assert conscientious objections, she said, you have to realize that is problematic. You're doing something to another person, and you're not paying the cost for your belief. I think that, she said, is a real issue. I just want you to take home that saying that you're not going to do something because of your conscientious, well, because of your religious beliefs, and it's not without consequences, and should not be without consequences, and I just want to put that out there. We are given an enormous, she continued, well, if you don't want to do this kind of work, don't work at Vanderbilt. Said Walsh, in case the objectors hadn't gotten the memo, Vanderbilt unveiled a program called Trans Buddies. These buddies are trans activists from the community who attend appointments with trans patients, monitoring doctors to guard against unsafe behavior, such as misgendering them. And here I thought maybe they were going to say warning them of the consequences, something that might be perceived as trying to talk them out of it. No, I guess they wouldn't dare do that. But there's more. VUMC also makes their trans buddies and other services available to children, quote, including chemical castration, writes Walsh, who added that they altered their website within the last month and yet forgot to delete a video from Vanderbilt Psychiatry's YouTube channel dated from 2020, which admits they will give hormones to kids as young as 13. Oh, yeah, and they like to perform double mastectomies on adolescent girls, too. He concluded this way. They now castrate, sterilize, and mutilate minors as well as adults, while apparently taking steps to hide this activity from the public view. This, he said, is what healthcare has become in modern America. And that, of course, folks, is when they're not killing them with DNA modifications injected to destroy their immune systems. But in response to Walsh's reporting, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee called for, oh, say it with me, folks, an investigation into VUMC. By now, a lot of you have probably noticed that your host is getting increasingly frustrated with the fact that the same old lies just keep coming back, and people just keep swallowing them, or at least they seem to. They're certainly not rising up in the streets, like at least some of the people in Europe, and saying, quit urinating on me and trying to get me to believe it's raining. Really, can there still be any doubt? They fully intend to kill millions, and if they get their way, folks, it'll be billions. And to make that point, take a listen to this story from December 20th of last year. It's not like we haven't seen this coming. On this front, and just about every other. Now that the supply chain has been pretty much destroyed, and Build Back Better really revealed as Don't Build Back at All, and those of you that survive what we've got planned for you in the way of poison pokes and various kinds of immune system destruction may find that getting food is going to be harder than ever, so you might starve anyway. I'm seeing more and more emphasis, folks, by people writing about what the real effects of the Green New Deal might end up being. And it's not just that you won't be able to drive to the store. It's that if you had a car and could drive to the store, and even if your grid-powered electric vehicle allowed you to go to the store, not only would there not be healthful food there available, there may not be any food at all. That leads me to a couple of pieces. Mike Adams did an interview with Brandon House over the weekend where he described the very same thing that I'm seeing in a piece from LouRockwell.com about decarbonization, which seems to be the real goal of the communist Green New Deal, and along with it, complete destruction of the food supply. The Lou Rockwell piece starts out like this. As late as the 1800s, the world was decarbonized in that there were no coal or natural gas power plants, and what the Beverly Hillbillies situation famously described during their theme song from the late 1960s is oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea. Well, it hadn't been discovered as something that could be manufactured, at that point too much anyway, into usable products. Before the 1900s, life was hard and dirty. Most people never traveled more than 100 or 200 miles from where they were born, and of course, life expectancy was short. But today, crude oil and other products that are called fossil fuels, but arguably really aren't, have been manufactured into all kinds of things used in the medical industry, fertilizers, electronics, and more than 6,000 other products that are literally the basis of lifestyles and complete economies. But now, worldwide efforts are in place to have electricity generated, or at least a little bit of it, by breezes and sunshine, and the intent is to decarbonize the electricity once generated by coal and natural gas. Most of you, of course, will find that it makes it simply unavailable. And the other fossil fuel, crude oil, is caught on the chopping block efforts to eliminate all three fossil fuels. But crude oil is seldom even used for electricity generation. He goes on to talk about Soleil Amirova, who withdrew as Biden's communist nominee for comptroller of the currency once her true Marxist-Leninist proclivities were outed. She still, though, wanted oil, coal, and gas industries to, quote, go bankrupt. evidently in the guise of pushing a return to a pre-1900 world, when the world had no coal or natural gas-generated electricity, nor any of the products nor fuels manufactured from crude oil. Things needed for ships, airlines, airplanes, militaries around the world, because none of those really existed before 1900. And had she been confirmed, arguably, decarbonization might have gone into warp drive. But what's increasingly clear is that so-called ESG, or environmental, socialist, and governance factors, are climbing up the agenda. And lost in that reality is the fact that the primary usage of crude oil is not, again, for generation of electricity, but to manufacture derivative products. Things that are the ingredients for everything else needed by economies and lifestyles around the world. Energy realism, says the author, requires that legislators, policymakers, and media, that for now at least demonstrate pervasive ignorance about crude oil usage, ought to understand the staggering scale of what decarbonization would mean. It was oil, says the author, that reduced infant mortality, extended longevity to past the age of 80, and allowed the world to grow to a population of 8 billion in less than two centuries. And it's now required to continue to provide the food, medicine, and communications in order to just simply sustain that population. Oh, Al, I guess that explains exactly why they want it gone, along with a few billion people in order to decrease the surplus population. The real push for EVs has to do with controlling your movement, not reducing your carbon footprint. Because obviously, not only does the electricity still have to be generated, and a whole whopping lot more of it, there are things in those EVs that require crude oil to manufacture, and not only that, the batteries require a whole lot of infrastructure to produce, and they don't last very long anyway. Then what? So even if they were remotely economically feasible, they're not sustainable. Well, at least not for the people that think they're going to actually have one someday. That is, if they're good little slaves. But why, oh why, asks the author, are the efforts to cease the use of crude oil so pervasive? Especially if you realize that, and not climate change, is the greatest threat to world civilization. For example, the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline increased world emissions, not decreased them, and cost to Americans, because Canadian crude oil is now being transported to the left coast, where it's then shipped halfway around the world to China, after China manufactures the crude oil into usable products in a country with significantly less environmental controls than America, and thus cheaper overall costs. Those products are then shipped back to America via air-polluting ships to West Coast ports. At least allegedly for now, for American consumption. So, suggests the author, this current misguided passion to implement a world with only intermittent electricity from breezes and sunshine are oblivious to the unintended consequences. Well, I think they're intended by some folks. It's just that the useful idiots don't know what they're talking about. Of a world without crude oil and the manufactured products from that crude oil. Now, at this point, the author goes on to list a number of those products, but I'm going to take a quick digression to a piece that Mike Adams did during an interview with Brannon House, where he pointed out that there is something called the Haber equation. It has to do with nitrogen and ammonia and how it is that fertilizers can thus be made from certain products like natural gas and crude oil. And if you take away the carbon-based part of that process, you end up with no fertilizer and thus a whole hell of a lot less food. And I guess since they want a whole hell of a lot less people anyway, maybe that fits the bigger picture. But at least it's worth pointing out. But there are a lot of other products, too, that depend on things that Big Brother's minions, who pretend to be green, really want to bring about, like no medications, medical equipment, no vaccines, and arguably that would be a good thing if we're only talking about the kind of vaccines that are intended to kill people. But remember, folks, those aren't real vaccines anyway. No water filtration systems or sanitation systems. Certainly fertilizers that help feed billions are a really big part of the equation. Same thing goes for pesticides to control locusts and other pests. A lot of communication systems, including cell phones, computers, iPhones, and iPads, would suffer dramatically. Well, at least people who want them and can't have them would. No vehicles, and arguably that means no vehicles of almost any kind. Same thing goes for airliners that now move about 4 billion people around the world, and cruise ships, too, that move about 25 million passengers around the world. Same thing goes for merchant ships moving products throughout the world. Oh, yeah, no tires for vehicles, no asphalt for roads, and for those that really care, no space program either. While wind turbines and solar panels might be able to generate intermittent electricity from those breezes and sunshine to allow a bit of decarbonization of the electric grid, it's the fact that renewables simply cannot manufacture any of these derivatives that really makes the hidden intent here increasingly undeniable and obvious. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.